Now here's a story about a woman with dreams. So picture perfect at 13 and Ebony Queen. Beneath the surface, it was more than just a quick smile. Nobody knew about a secret, so it took a while. I could see a tear fall slow down the black.
So guys, you are tuned in on my first episode, on my third episode, sorry, of Cricket Talks. I'm here with Aaron from Cricket Connoisseur. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing very well, Mo. Thank you very much for having me on again. And yeah, excited to talk some cricket again tonight.
Good, good, good. We're going to be covering the Australia ODI series again. Got the, obviously, what did you actually, first of all, we might as well get straight onto it. What were your predictions for the final ODI before we got to the T20s? Do you remember last episode?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I think I said an India win.
Yeah.
I must have done.
I think you were, because I went the other way, I think, as far as I remember. I'll insert it if I can. Are you both predicting that it's a finishing game for Australia again?
I don't know, because I love Indian cricket. This is the thing, I do love Indian cricket. I don't want to see them get to a stage where they've lost six games in a row, so... Call me optimistic. I think India will win it. I think they may find their winning combination tomorrow.
Seriously?
Why not? It's cricket. There's a 50-50 chance. Anything can happen.
I would say that Australia have got it in the bag again. But Australia have got a bag. Would you say it's a bigger win than what was to last game?
Well, I've chosen India purely out of heart and love for the IPL and Indian cricketers.
I'm going to be blunt, because my passion for the countries are about the same. I hate them equally, so I can't say I do. I'm going to say they're going to win. I'm going to say they win, but it's going to be by a closer margin this time. I'm going to put about, if it's a chasing game, I think India are going to be short of 20 odd runs, maybe 30. And if Australia are chasing, they're going to get it pretty comfortably, I'd say, by about 6 wickets. But I said about 40 runs a win to Australia if they were defending.
You stupid!
Which obviously went the other way. They played Natarajan, who performed well, and yeah, credits to them. They managed to avoid a whitewash. But T20 series, did it go the way you expected to?
In a way, yes. I thought it would be closely contested series. And I think throughout the series, we saw some fantastic both batting and bowling. You mentioned Natarajan there. He has really, really impressed me so far. He looks like he's going to go on to become a real star in this India team. His Yorker bowling was absolutely impeccable. And in addition to Natarajan, you've also seen the likes of Pandya, Kohli. I mean, Matthew Wade's been in fantastic form as well. I thought we've seen a fantastic mix of both really good batting and really good bowling. With regards to the fielding, a bit more iffy. We could have seen some better fielding, and particularly in the last two games, some dodgy ground fielding and some drop catches.
Yeah.
With, do you remember Kohli's run out of Wade as well?
Yeah, the fumble.
that was very, very strange.
Samson did play a couple of good fielding moves as well.
He did.
So
very, very true. Yeah, he saved four runs.
Yeah.
On the boundary.
But yeah, Cody's fumble. Firstly, the idea that Cody, it's weird for him to fumble the ball in the first place. He seems a very sound fielder. And then it was the idea that, to be fair, in terms of the run out itself, I wouldn't say it was particularly Wade's fault. And it was more to do with bad luck, to be honest, because the way he bounced twice, because it was a drop, and then it was Kohli sort of recovered it, and Wade didn't have a good view, and then Smith was a bit on and off, and it was just kind of bad luck at the end of it. But we're going to touch on Wade as well, but Wade was very good. Obviously, they didn't have Warner in the T20 side. Did it have as big as an impact as you thought it would going into the series?
I'm going to be honest, no. I actually think Australia did quite well. I think with regards to the first game, I believe they had a 56-run partnership. Fair enough, it petered out in the second two. But as you said, Matthew Wade, absolutely sensational. He really, really picked up the slack of David Warner in his absence. Yeah. And today, what was it, 80 from 53? A brilliant, brilliant knock from Matthew Wade. Played the experienced role, set a fantastic foundation for the rest of the innings. And yeah, I thought he had a very, very good series.
It just definitely goes to show, when you put your players in the position where they actually perform, they're so much more impactful. If you look at the, if you look at where Wade, I think Wade was batting number 6 or 7 in the first T20, and he scored 7 odd. And then obviously, we'll touch on it again later on. But the idea that from Wade going batting 7, scoring 7, or batting 6, scoring 7, to then captaining the next T20 and opening the batting, I'm sure fans would have been frustrated if they didn't have a huge idea of what Matthew Wade was capable of. But Matthew Wade is an opener. It's as simple as that. So, to be honest, I wasn't, despite his low score in the first game, I was kind of expecting him to score in the second. But let's look at game by game. Game one, India played Natarajan after the last ODI. A brave move, but I guess it was sort of well-deserved. Was there any particular reason they didn't play Bumrah, or was it solely because they wanted to bring Natarajan on?
I'm not sure, to be honest. Maybe they have an eye on the Test series. That's the only thing that I can really think of. Maybe try and limit the chances of injury. Other than that, maybe a bit of a strange call. Because again, even T20, I know it's not the same format, but you're getting match experience. And when we've missed the majority of the year, I mean, these India players haven't played cricket for months before the IPL. Surely getting that match experience would be a bit better. But then again, you have to weigh up the risks and the reward, don't you, really? They've gone with the safe and conservative option.
Yeah, no, no, now that you say it, I think playing Bumrah, not playing Bumrah to rest him for the T, because T20 obviously are pretty much back-to-back, aren't they? So I guess it would have been a bit of a strain that wasn't necessarily needed, especially when you got a few capable fast bowlers available. He produced figures of 3 for 30 on debut, which to go for 7.5 and over, which is, you could say, a little over what you'd want at 6-7 and over. But for a debutant, you can't. Very, very impressive. And those 3 wickets were integral as well. You know, you got Maxwell out early, Darcy, as he was sort of kicking on, he had a bit of a strange innings, and then Stark. And Stark's particular wicket was arguably just as important. You know, it came to, I think it was, they lost by, India won by 11 runs. And if you know Stark, you know, he's a bowler who can bat, essentially. Australia, you can't win the game against Australia until you've got Hazelwood and Zampa on batting, which for me, I think getting Stark out was, you know, just as important, and it was good he got him out. Swepson also showed some really good signs of resistance. What did you make out of him?
With regards to his batting or his bowling?
Well, his batting was important. He got 12 or 5. he showed a little bit of resistance, but his bowling as well. What did you make out?
Exactly, yeah. That's what I'm saying. I was going to involve a mix of the two, as you said. A nice rearguard action in the first T20I. And then in the next two, figures of 1 for 25 and 3 for 23. I thought he had a fantastic series. And it's great, great news for any Brisbane Heat fans watching this, because your main frontline spinner is in great form. He's finally, just come off the back of a fantastic series. So, yeah, brilliant from Mitch Swepson.
Yeah, Australia didn't really look like they had a good plan for Yuzvendra, who finally made a... We're gonna call it a blip in his career. He's been very consistent, and then that ODI series, no one really knew what was going on. And then Washington, who bowled really good, didn't take a wicket. I think he bowled 0 for 16 off his 4 overs. And then I think when I was looking at that, it was kind of looking at the point of Washington didn't take any wickets, but I think his 4 overs was integral, as in they won by 11 runs, and it brought me back. I was constantly bringing back the point of, is bowling about taking wickets or reducing runs? And the idea that coaches are now looking at teams around that are not necessarily wicket takers, in a sense, because you've got 120 balls. If I was a coach and I was focusing my time and energy on players, it'd more be towards, you know, reducing the amount of runs you can talk. I think Samuel Badgery actually talked about it at one point. He was talking about how he was, obviously he's a successful leg spinner in his career. He was talking about his success, and he was going on about how he wasn't actually looking for wickets. It was the idea that look for dots, and those wickets will actually have, the wickets will come, because you get dot balls, you get pressure, you get wickets. So a really good start. Well, a save by India, to be honest. Then going on to game two, like I said, Australia made the move to put Wade up after his 7. Finch had to go for a game because of his, a hip injury?
Yeah, slight hip injury, I think it was, yeah.
But they've put Wade up. Fans, obviously, like I said, fans I wouldn't say obviously fans didn't make as much of a difference. You've still got social media, but in terms of physical fans being there, would they have obviously looked frustrated because Wade's going on to open, he only made 7 in that game. But I personally was happy about it. What were you thinking about Wade being made captain and then opening as well, despite his 7?
Now, that was the interesting one, because with regards to the batting, I thought that was absolutely fine. The actual, not so much controversy, but there was a debate in particular on social media about him being captain when you had Steve Smith in the team, and people saying it's been 2 years, it's been long enough for him to have served his punishment per se. But in my opinion, I think that was perfectly valid. He led from the front, because when you put that extra responsibility on Matthew Wade, whether he's batting as captain or whether he's batting to save an innings, he just seems to really bring out the best of him. So for me, I actually think that was a masterstroke from Australia, and it paid off in fantastic fashion. So yeah, I think they get a nice big tick for that decision in the second T20.
And it also provides a little bit more comfort to the side, knowing that if Finch is gone again, yes, you have Steve Smith as an available option. Yes, you have Maxwell as a potential option. But then you've also got Wade, who's proven himself. I think, was that the innings he scored 80 on as well?
That was today. He did score 50, though.
50, yeah. 50,
so 56 or something.
Yeah, then in that game, they lost Stark for Sams. Was there a reason Stark wasn't played as well? Was that for the test as well?
Potentially.
Yeah. And then Finch's replacement was Stoinis, which obviously, if you swap it out, yes, it doesn't make sense, but Stoinis would have played lower because that's where Matthew Wade was playing. So it could have...
They could have opened with Stoinis, seeing as he's done it for the Melbourne Stars, had that 147 at the MCG.
I think it was
big bash.
I think with India winning the first game, I think it was a risk that just wasn't needed, if you get what I mean. Wade being a natural opener in T20s anyway, I think it just provided a little more safety with it. Australia kind of looking for that win anyway. After losing the first game. So, yeah, I definitely get what you're saying as well. Didn't he open the... Didn't he bat very high... Yeah, very high up the order for Delhi as well. And then we've got another few key players. Sean Abbott was played again. Moises was played. Moises kind of being... Would you say he's being slept on a little bit? It's kind of... He's bowled some very good... the first game, he bowled some very... He had very good figures. You know, he bowled 3 for 22. And then 0 for 9 in the second. With Maxwell, on the other hand, I know they're two different bowlers, but Maxwell being the more experienced spinner, he went for 19 in his first over. And then that was the game where Moises had his one over. And then I'm guessing the idea was that Maxwell took a couple and then Sean took a couple as well. What's your point on the idea of Moises as well? Would you say he's being slept on a little bit?
So ever so slightly, yes. But it's just about, in terms of long term, I think that's where people are looking. Because they did have Cam Green in the squad as well, obviously one of Australia's hottest prospects at the moment in the domestic circuit. So, yeah, I've always liked Moses. Used to play for RCB in 2013, so I've always had a little bit of a soft spot for Enriquez. But, yeah, I'd agree. I feel like he's a very consistent domestic performer. He just, I don't think, has had the opportunity, per se, in recent times to reflect that on the international stage. But, yeah, you never know. Could have more chances after what you've just said. A very impressive series.
Yeah, definitely. Looking back at the game, Hardik also made the statement that Australia, that despite being on a good batting pitch and they made 190, they were still actually, he felt they were 10, 15 runs short, which was whether he made that after this game or not, I can't exactly remember. It's a very bold statement to make, you know, 195. And then obviously he performed as well. He made 44 or something like that. Natarajan again looking very mature, bowled 2 for 20 off his 4 overs, which for a second international T20, hats off to him, you know what I mean? That was a sort of only promising spell there was in the entire India bowling lineup, especially when you got the likes of Bumrah, Yuzvendra Chahal, who were there, who went for runs as well. Then looking out at game 3 finally. If you're setting the scene, you're looking at India's 2-0 win at this point. Obviously, when home turf in Australia, the series is lost, but they needed the win because, if I'm not wrong, is India Australia kind of closing a gap in the rankings as well?
Ever so slightly. Australia are second, obviously, England are first now with the win against South Africa. Yeah. But yeah, of course, I mean, all three are jostling for that top spot, aren't they, heading into next year's World Cup in India?
Yeah. So at that point, Finch was back for final game. Obviously, he might as well not have been there. Wade was kept high, fair enough, put in his position, he played. Darcy was a bit of a waste of a player, in my opinion. What did you make out of Darcy before I say anything crazy?
It is an interesting one with Darcy Shaw. Again, though, he's an opener. So you could always make that argument, should he be batting down the order in the first place? But yeah, it is a shame. Obviously, it's not nice to see a player of Darcy Short's calibre out of form. But yeah, he is. And yeah, unfortunately, just hadn't had the rub of the green in this limited over series.
Yeah, do you think, now that he was played at six again, I think he finished not out on a couple, or he got out early. Would you say he's I don't know how you word it, the next future limited series coming up, would you say his position's technically at risk, or are they carrying on? Do you think Australia will carry on with him?
It's an interesting one, in particular seeing how well Wade has taken up the opener's role, because you'd think they could have the left-hand right-hand combination of Wade and Finch.
Yeah.
And then if Short's going to play in that 5-6 spot, you've got Maxwell, Enriquez, Stoinis all battling for those spots. So in my opinion, yes, I do think his spot is at risk. In terms of in the squad, should be in there, offers some fantastic squad depth, also offers his handy wrist spin option as well.
Yeah,
but yeah,
yeah,
I agree, in the starting 11, yeah, it's looking a bit risky at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's not entirely his fault. You know, he's playing out of position again. He's batting six. His weakness is against spin. India play two spinners, two of which, you know, two very strong spinners. It's not the fact that one of them is a debutant or something. In my opinion, he either should have, Australia should have either played Stoinis or put Darcy up the order. And if Stoinis is in, not play Darcy at all, because at the end of the day, you're playing him at six. He's not going to bowl. They've got Zampa and Swepson, who offer the lift right arm wrist spin, both for them. So left arm wrist spin generally isn't needed as much. They definitely could have played Stoinis, which just would have made so much more sense. You've got someone who's used to batting in middle order, and he provides that, you know, medium pace as well. They put up 186, which either way was respectable. And then again, Natarajan, 0-33 off his four. It wasn't obviously, I think that was probably one of the best figures in the games from India's side. What did you make of him in that game?
Again, I'm just going to continue the same vein of thought, really. I thought he's been really impressive. And again, the Yorker bowling, that's almost his unique characteristic. It's what we saw him develop so well in the IPL. And yet again, he replicated that superbly, I thought. Yet again, economic, dangerous at the death, a fantastic option, I think, and a more than viable cover, I think, for Bumrah at the death as well,
yeah,
which is an incredibly high compliment for someone of that, what I say, international standing so far. He's only three games into his T20i career. So yeah, incredibly impressed. Wonderful yet again. And yeah, I've loved watching Tangarasi Natarajan. Wonderful, wonderful bowler. And in my view, he is the real feel-good story of 2020.
100%. Would you say, I haven't actually put this down, but is there an award that ICC put out for emerging players? If there was one.
I'm not sure he'd be eligible, though. That's the only problem. Because
he's coming too late.
29. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm saying he's had a very, very strong start to his international career.
He has.
So, yeah, then if we're looking at the second innings, Kale Rahul had the same fate as Finch, went out very, very early. Kohli, the master of the chase, kind of lived up to that expectation, scored 85, but the rest of the team just crumbled, essentially. They scraped their 1-7-4. Something I noticed as well was a lot of wides being given away. I think Australia definitely need to work on that. I think extras have never become so important in the last 3-4 years, especially in T20 cricket. They just make all the difference. So yeah, Swepson bowled well. He didn't concede a single boundary in his four overs, which is very impressive. 3-23 off his, and then Zampa 1-21 off his three. What would you take away from that series for later T20s against other sides?
For which side? Which side would you like me to focus on?
Well, let's go Australia since we're looking at their bowling.
Fair enough. I think with bowling, I think the real takeaway is actually Mitch Swepson. I think you've got Adam Zampa. We've seen the rise of Adam Zampa, I think, in 2019 to 2020. He's really matured and he is now a bona fide wicket-taking option, in my opinion. So in the subcontinent, if they need someone else, say if they need a third spinner, because Glenn Maxwell as well is more than a suitable option. Yeah. Mitch Swepson has really put his hat into the ring now, I think. So he's definitely a takeaway. And then, of course, the opening partnership as well. I think Wade and Finch would actually be quite a nice one if you don't have David Warner, of course. Of course, go back to Warner and Finch if that is the case and Warner's fully fit. But yeah, I think that Australia, although they've lost, they play some really good cricket. Yeah. And I think, as you've said, they're definitely developing a very, very good side heading into next year's World Cup. And I think with that opening partnership, that third spinning option, I think they've actually set themselves quite nicely up for success.
Now a player that didn't have as much of an amazing series, Daniel Sams. What do you make of him?
It's a shame because I like Daniel Sams. I'm a Sydney Thunder fan. He was absolutely sensational for us last season, leading wicket taker in the entire Big Bash. But I don't know what's really gone on with his game, to be honest. He seems a bit rusty at the moment. And the problem with Daniel Sams, his real, what to say, path to success is his variations. It's his slower balls, his knuckle balls, his cutters. And at the moment, he doesn't really seem to really have a game plan in order to use them. He just seems to be going to natural variation almost, as opposed to planned, thought through game plans. So for me, yeah, again, a bit disappointing, a bit underwhelming. But again, he's another one, pretty new to the international stage. Give him time. He's a wonderful all-rounder. We've seen it in the Big Bash. We saw it to some extent in the IPL as well, for the Delhi Capitals. So again, I just think he needs a bit more time, but does definitely need to improve. And hopefully, being alongside the likes of an experienced player of Andrew Tye's standing, hopefully that'll help him heading into future series.
But here's where it is for me. You make a very good point, but for me, it's also a fact that it's really a wrong place at the wrong time thing for me, for Daniel Sams. He's gone for, if I've got his figures up right here, of his 3.4 overs in the second T20, he went for 41 runs for his one wicket. So that's 11 and over. And then 29 runs of his two overs in the second game, which obviously isn't great. Yes, he's a debutant, but then you've also got the factor of Sean Abbott, who isn't a player who's necessarily had a massive amount of international experience yet. Is he fighting for that extra seam position if there is one? You've got your Pat Cummins, your Mitchell Starc, your Hazelwood, who are sort of your dream team right now of fast bowlers essentially. Then you've got Andrew Tye, who's also in and out with his variation. He did have a one very expensive game which he gave 47 runs away in. But he just brings in a lot of experience. So I think he's in the side regardless, for obviously with the T20 World Cup, which is not very, very long away. So would you say, in that sense, is this position temporarily at pause for maybe what are we looking at? Maybe 6 to 9 months? How far away is the T20 World Cup actually?
Yeah, it's not long. It's October, November time next year. Yeah. So, yeah, not long at all. In terms of Dan Sams, I would agree. I think Andrew Tye, because it's so short a turnaround to this next World Cup, I do think he's the more viable option at the moment. But that being said, heading into more bilateral series, maybe, I do see a future for Dan Sams, but he just needs confidence. He's very much a confidence bowler, and we saw that in the Big Bash. He just got better and better and better as the tournament progressed. If Australia keep the faith in him, I do think it'll pay dividends heading into the future.
100%. I think, from, like I just said, I think for me, it'd be a case of keep Abbott in, hold up Daniel Sams, but make it very, very clear to him, don't leave him in the lurch, like the way Pakistan do with their seamers. Explain to him the fact that, you know, you're very much in the viewpoint for Australian seamers. It's the fact that we've got a very short time into the World Cup. Let the World Cup pass, and then when there's a lot less risk involved and you've got series again, then we'll very, very much be looking to bring you in. But I think with this period, you've got, how long have we got? 10 months? 9 months? Until then, I think it's very much I'd focus on personally Sean Abbott for development. Sams can come in for development, but the very main focus would be on your Starc, your Hazelwood, your Cummins, while they're very much still in their prime years, I'd say. Then you've got something that I think is interesting, the Test Series, which is coming up. It's going to be I think it's going to be more exciting than what's happened in the T20s and ODIs. My favorite format is the Test series, weirdly. Would you say Swips is knocking on the door, first of all, as a second spinner if conditions suit it?
Yes, and I think in particular the SCG in January, that could be really, really interesting. I don't imagine so at Adelaide. So obviously you got the GOAT himself, Nathan Lyon, with the pink ball. But yes, I agree. I think he is emerging as that second spin option. Adam Zampa would be an outsider's call, but I don't think he's really going to be competitive heading into the future. You look at Mitch Swepson's first-class record for Queensland, it's a lot better. So yes, I think Mitch Swepson, this could be a really, really good opportunity. As I said, the third test match at the SCG, there's usually a bit more grip, a bit more purchase for the spinners. Yep. So yeah, I think we could see him in the series.
Then another thing I've got to mention is the idea of Matthew Wade. Now, it's very weird because Matthew Wade isn't... Does he open in the state four-day games? Do you know that?
No, he doesn't. He's usually middle order. Tasmania have gone with Charlie Wakeham now, who was, funnily enough, just signed for the Hobart Hurricanes in the Big Bash.
Okay.
But no, he's usually 4-5 for the Tigers.
Because my point was, has Wade pushed in this very short period of time, has he pushed his... pushed his case forward to bat maybe slightly higher, but then you've got obviously, can Warner, do you think Warner be able to recover in time with the Test series?
And well, you'd hope so, but the only question there is you have got Burns in the team, Joe Burns, another Queensland native, funnily enough, and then you've got the debutant, I suppose, if he does make his debut, Will Pekowski, who's had a magnificent Sheffield Shield season so far for Victoria. So as much as Wade could in theory, in Red Bull cricket, he's a lot better in the middle to lower order almost. So I don't imagine that will happen, even if Warner isn't fit.
Okay, and then you've got Cameron Green, obviously. He's been very, very impressive in a short period of time. He scored, if you're looking at the A games he just played against India, 125 not out. He got 0-9 off his 8 overs with 4 maidens, which is slightly above 1 in economy. He got both openers out in the second innings, Shaw and Gill, at 3 and over. Is he knocking for a position to play? And who would you say he's looking to potentially sneak a place off?
We've just mentioned him, Matthew Wade. I suppose he's the only one. You've got the set top four. If Warner is back, you've definitely got set top four. Travis Head has been in fantastic form. You can't really... I wouldn't drop him, personally. And he does offer you finger spin if needed. So I suppose the only way in which you could get Cam Green in is to put him at 6. And the batsman at number 6 happens to be Matt Wade. Do I think that'll happen? Probably not. I don't think they'll rush him in. There's no need to rush him in for a pink ball test under the lights at Adelaide. But in terms of in this series, in particular if Australia take the lead, let's say they take a 2-0 lead, for example, perfect opportunity to bring him in. So really looking forward to Cam Green. Hopefully we get to see him. But even if not, just for the future, I'm really, really looking forward to watching this guy in Australia in his baggy green.
Who would you compare him to, actually? Because he's a very, very... I'm talking all around. The idea that he's 6'8", he's a run machine, he's a mature first-class bowler so far. Would you compare him to anybody, past or present?
It's an interesting one. I'm not going to make a direct comparison because I think he's slightly quicker and maybe less destructive. Yeah. But almost a Colin de Grandhomme, almost. Okay, I'm not making a direct comparison. But in terms of he's a guy who can come in, if needed, he'll get your wicket. He's not your spearhead, per se. Yeah. And he's also someone, if needed as well. Let's say you're 200 and some in for 4, for example. You bring him in, he gets a quick fire 40, 50 runs, and he just boosts that innings. So maybe the Colin de Grandhomme comparison, potentially. If not, maybe leaving looking at Australia, Mitchell Marsh. He could be almost a direct comparison to there, both Western Australians as well. So I suppose the comparison's there geographically. I'd say he suits that role.
What about Kyle Jamieson?
The Kiwi?
Yes.
Interesting. I think Cam Green's batting is better. That's all really? I'll say. Yeah.
Kyle Jamieson, yes.
A bowling all-rounder.
In longevity, in terms of his ability to bat long periods of time, you're right with Cameron Green. But I'm talking about, like, the very, very bigger picture. I'm talking his height, his just general batting ability, and then his bowling as well. Because Kyle Jamieson is very much shaping out to be a similar player to what Cameron Green is showing himself right now. He's batting... Would Cameron Green, you say, bat higher than Jamieson? Because Jamieson's batting about 7-ish right now?
I would say would. As I said, I back Cam Green's batting. Carl Jameson's a guy, again, let's say New Zealand, for example, like they did against the West Indies. They've got a nice, stable platform. He just comes out firing. So I think Greeny's batting is better. That's just my opinion.
He's batting eight, which is eight at New Zealand. So they've got Daryl Mitchell and Tom Blundell, who bat before him, and he's scoring 50. We're going to touch upon that as well. New Zealand and West Indies. Tell me what you made of the whole test overall, first of all.
Well, I think it was a very interesting test. In particular, when you looked at that wicket, and someone said it to me on social media, it was almost a mirage. And I thought that was a wonderful way of describing it. Because when you look at the end of day one, everyone thought maybe the West Indies will bowl them out. And New Zealand finished on 243 for two. Obviously, Kane Williamson being the spearhead of that, ended with a career best score of 251. And yeah, from there on, it just went from bad to worse for the West Indies. The same old problems kept on cropping up with regards to the discipline, the temperament of their test match batting. And not only that, you look at patience. And I know patience is a very cliche thing, but they were gifting their wickets away. Like, there are good 3-4 dismissals, which easily could have been avoided through, as I said, good discipline, good temperament, a nice, good, strong defence. And yeah, unfortunately, yeah, those same issues unfortunately came to the forefront. And New Zealand's incredibly, incredibly gifted bowling attack fully exploited them and obviously won the game quite comfortably.
Do you think that... Oh, what was the point I was going to make? Yes, Jermaine Blackwood, a player who's had a bit of a gap in his international career, come back, proved his point. I personally, the last time I remember Jermaine Blackwood very distinctly would have been England, West Indies, England being at home. He scored, I think it was Under the Lights. Was it a pink ball game?
At Edgbaston, I was there.
Yeah. Were you there as well?
Yeah.
And he scored, I think he scored 100, if I'm not wrong, or it was a game that he scored a few very good knocks and Shai Hope scored his 200s.
At Headingley, yeah.
Yeah. So that was the last time I remember him. Personally, I very much like him as a player. I think he looks himself, if I compare him to somebody, he comes across as someone who's obviously less experienced right now. He hasn't had a huge amount of test cricket, but I'd say an Ajinkya Rahane, an Asad Shafiq, that's kind of the two very much lower to middle order batsmen that I'd compare him to, but he's a very, very sound cricketer. I think this 100, the way West Indies have been, unfortunately, the last 2 years or so, with test cricket, I think he's sort of both proven his point as a sound player in the middle order, and at the same very same time, West Indies haven't exactly helped their case all around with their batting, essentially. Like you said, they're very, very impatient. You got would you say who would you say particularly underperformed for you?
I don't really want to say it because I actually quite like this batsman, but I mentioned it on Flow Sports as well in the Caribbean, and that was John Campbell. Because when you looked at the stumps on day two, the West Indies were number 49. John Campbell was 26 not out from, I think, 70-odd balls.
Yeah.
And he looked really good. He was leaving 40% of his deliveries, really good discipline, really good temperament, really judging his off-stump line very, very well. And as an opener, that is absolutely vital.
Yeah.
And then it comes into day three. And within the morning session, he threw away his wicket really cheaply, just chipped it straight to Kane Williamson at extra cover. So for me, definitely John Campbell. With that being said, in that first innings, I think he actually had the highest score. So maybe underperforming by my expectations of John Campbell, because I do think he can be an excellent player. But again, he just needs to take more time at the crease. I know he's a very free-flowing batsman.
Yeah.
But he just needs to realise, as an opener, his wicket is precious. This West Indies batting lineup has not performed, in particular 1-4. So he really has to dig in, get that mental fortitude, see off the new ball, basically, and just get his side off to a good start. And even if they don't get many runs, again, just see off the new ball, make it easy for the likes of Bravo, Chase, Holder to come in after you. And then that will be, I think, his place established in the side.
Yeah. Was there a particular reason Shai Hope wasn't playing?
Yes, he's been dropped because he has been obviously by his very, very high standards, and I like Shai Hope a lot, he hasn't been in form. So that's why they're trialling out something new now with that West Indies batting lineup.
Fair. But to me, that doesn't even make any sense to me. It's the idea that West Indies as a top order aren't in form. Shai Hope is very much one of your more experienced players. He's, yes, he hasn't performed, and I very much get the point of that, but has a top order? Because then if you're going to go Shai Hope out of all the top order, where does Shamar Brooks come into it? Where does your openers come into it? Because in reality, it's either, for me, from what I've seen, it's either Shai Hope scores. If Shai Hope doesn't score, you've got Rustin Chase. If you haven't got Rustin Chase, then Jason Holder kind of has to pick up that slack with the bat as well, which he bowls long overs as well, which for me isn't ideal. I think he's at some point going to very much push himself towards an injury with the amount of physical stuff he's going on. So going into the next game, do you see any changes being made?
Yes. Well, there's going to be two definite enforced changes because Kemal Roach has gone home, had to deal with the tragic passing of his father. And I just want to say this as well, just for the record. My goodness, my respect for him. I always have a lot for him. He's the eighth leading test wicket taker in West Indies history. But to play under those circumstances, bowl his heart out and take wickets as well. I mean, just everyone should respect Kemal Roach for that. It was an incredible, incredible performance under very, very difficult circumstances. And then the other one, which is enforced, and this is quite a big one, is Shane Dowrich. Now, he's injured his hand. That's your wicketkeeper out. Shamar Brooks did come in almost as an injury cover. But the reason why I really, really quite like this is because we could see Joshua De Silva make his debut. And I really, really like this guy. He's a wonderful batsman, great temperament, performed in the England warm-up games. And behind the stumps, he's a really, really solid wicketkeeper. So for me, hopefully, fingers crossed, I'll keep them crossed for you, Josh. He follows my page. So, hopefully he'll make his debut at the Basin Reserve in Wellington.
Great. What about the New Zealand? Do you think, with it only being a two-test series, do you think they could potentially play somebody slightly less experienced?
I don't think we will. It's a shame because I mentioned him beforehand, Colin de Grandhomme at the Basin Reserve, last time he played the West Indies, got a century. Yeah. So he would have been quite nice to bring in for Mitchell. I suppose in terms of a like-for-like replacement, maybe you could have Blundell opening instead of Will Young. But again, that'd be very, very harsh to get rid of a debutant after one game. So I don't imagine they'll make any changes. The only one which I could see, potentially, Mitchell Santner coming in for Daryl Mitchell. But again, Basin Reserve, pretty much seem friendly in comparison to a lot of New Zealand tracks. So I don't really think they'll make too many changes, to be honest, the Black Caps.
Perfect. And finally, finishing off, we've got obviously the England-South Africa entire series has called off. Before the games would have undergone, how do you think it would have gone?
It's an interesting one. I said England would have won 2-1 because both sides had very experimental squads. But I think England probably would have emerged out on top.
Perfect. I would have actually said an England 3-0 because you've got, if I'm not wrong, Faf du Plessis was out of the series anyway.
Correct.
And somebody else as well. I can't remember exactly.
Rabada got injured in the T20.
Yes. Yeah. So two key players, Rabada obviously being seen as like more experienced player alongside Ngidi, and then Faf du Plessis, who really only seems to be one of the few rocks aside van der Dusen, who has his more bad days than good very recently. I would have gone for an England 3-0 win. That kind of finishes off everything in terms of international cricket. I haven't got a huge amount. Obviously, the Lanka Premier League's going on right now. Haven't had to keep up with a lot of it. Just been very busy. But I'll tell you what I have caught up with on social media is the amount of the fights that happened or arguments. I think, was it between one of the Afghan seamers?
Naveen Al-Haq and Shahid Afridi, because Naveen Al-Haq was giving a bit of chat to Mohammed Amir when he was having a bat, and then Afridi came out and had some choice words for the young Afghan, to say the least.
And then Mohammed Amir came back with 5 wickets today,
5 for 26 yesterday. Incredible. Brilliant.
So that about covers everything I've got for today. We'll be back next week. If you aren't following, you're sleeping under a rock. Follow Cricket Talks on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes. Follow my Twitter, my blogs. I'll put everything, obviously, in the handles on the YouTube visuals. I'll be honest, right? The Spotify streams have gone very much downwards. But YouTube is actually recovering. I'm very happy. I'm happy with that. Episode 2 didn't do as well, but got some plans with other videos that should hopefully drive a few people to the video and force them to watch me talk as well. So yeah, like I said, we've got Aaron with us. Thank you for joining me again. If you guys want to follow his podcast, which is the County Cricket Podcast, just on an episode with Dean Ahmed, the apprentice candidate and fine edge cricket founder, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yeah, very, very good podcast. I need to finish listening to it, but looked very good. Any last things to say, Aaron?
Not really, Mo. Just, of course, thank you very much for having me on. And to all of the listeners or viewers, if you're watching us on YouTube, go and support Mo. Okay, he's working hard. He's grinding out these videos and content for you. So yeah, please just subscribe to Mo on YouTube and Spotify.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll see you guys on next week, hopefully Saturday. This video, if you're watching it, if you're listening it now or watching it now, it should be out on a Saturday, 8 o'clock, and we'll be back again next Saturday from there. So yeah, we'll see you guys episode 4. Take care. Now here's a story about a woman with dreams, so picture perfect at 13 and ebony queen. Beneath the surface, it was more than just a quick smile. Nobody knew about a secret, so it took a while. I could see a tear fall slowly.